I'm Jay from Push Black, and welcome to Season 3 of Black History Year. While a lot of folks are justifiably celebrating the end of a tyrant's reign, we at Push Black have learned from history that one victory doesn't win the war. It's why, on this season of the Black History Year podcast, we're lifting up the knowledge that will help us continue the fight forward. We'll learn about changemakers who transformed subjugated Black communities and the conditions that led to their government-funded assassinations. We'll explore the ways Black art has led to Black power, the beauty of our diverse linguistics, and dig into theories and concepts that reimagine what being Black in this world can be, now and in the future. That's right, we're delivering 12 episodes that will prepare you in the ongoing fight for liberation. So make sure you tell your people that we're back. Now let's get to it. Coming up, I'm sitting down with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., the son of Illinois Black Panther Party's fearless chairman, Fred Hampton. Following in the footsteps of his late father, Hampton Jr. is a political activist whose guiding principle is also to serve the people. He's the president and chairman of the Black Panther Party Cubs and is working hard to preserve his father's legacy and childhood home, the Hampton House. Chairman Hampton Jr. also had his hand in the feature film Judas and the Black Messiah. We'll learn his thoughts on the film and whether or not it does Hampton's legacy justice. But first, let's get caught up on the true story behind the movie.
To Chicago and beyond, Chairman Fred Hampton was a beacon of hope. A respected community activist who chaired the Illinois Black Panther Party and always put the people first. But the FBI and Chicago Police Force didn't see him this way. To them, he was a nuisance, a radical whose voice could mobilize change and disrupt the status quo. He was a danger, a threat, a fearless Black man in America. One who refused to back down to a violent, paramilitary-trained police force. And for this, they despised him. So, it was on that December 4th morning in 1969 that the U.S. government would have their way. As he lay defenseless in bed, cops raided his home and ruthlessly assassinated Chairman Fred Hampton. This moment magnified the egregious state, federal, and local policies that Black lives were expendable, especially those identified as a threat by law enforcement. In many ways, our society operates from this belief. That's why Black men and women are still brutalized and murdered in their beds, on the street, and in their communities. In cities across the country, including Chicago, where Hampton was murdered, youth activists are making their voices heard, calling for real change in support of Black lives. And yet, we still have work to do. Because those who wanted to silence Fred Hampton, the U.S. government and COINTELPRO, those who watched his every move, they're still out here, and they're still watching us.
Chairman, what does Black liberation look like to you?
In essence, self-determination, the right to determine the destiny of our communities. You know, many people attempt to devalue our struggle for liberation to that of a struggle to tap into the moral consciousness of other communities, what have you. The reality is, again, that the right to determine the destiny of our communities.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of our community may not have as much clarity around that. It's like, you know, I can wake up, put on the clothes I want to, go eat where I want to, shop where I want to. I can practice self-determination, right? How are the conditions we live in now different than what your vision for self-determination would be?
United States imperialism possesses the ability to, as Malcolm X said, provide a democracy that's really a facade or front of freedom, where in many cases we come to grips with the brutal reality of having freedom of choice, having quote unquote freedom of choice, as long as we don't say, as long as we don't choose the wrong things. You know, generation after generation, we're told directly or indirectly, overtly as well as covertly, that these are occupations that you should seek out. These are your definitions of beauty. This is what you should define as a relationship. I recall speaking to some youth some years back, and some struggles that ensued. In fact, the name of the school was Winnie Mandela, and I took issue with the fact of a kind of arrogance that some of the youth had who didn't know who Winnie Mandela was, and was kind of nonchalant about even wanting to know. One young brother had said something to I think he's about 14 years old. He said, "They kill people like you." That was his response to me. He said, and he said, "You know, you talk about Malcolm X, and you talk about, you know, the Black Panther Party. They kill people like us." And Stephen Biko, or the Black Conscience Movement, has said that Black people in particular must grasp the ability to distinguish intelligence from the ability to articulate. And though it may not be articulated, you know, in every arena, where there's a knowledge. Many people say, "Well, Chairman Fred, you must understand a lot of people don't know what the Black Panther Party was about, what your father represented." I said, on the contrary, I believe that many people do, quote unquote, know. That causes the hesitancy of the engaging the subject.
So for listeners who may not be as familiar as they need to be with your father, can you tell us about him as a person and as a revolutionary?
I'm sitting at the home which he grew up in, literally as we speak. 804 South 17th Avenue, Maywood, Illinois. Sitting across the street from the elementary school he attended. There are countless of war stories I've been told and continuously being told, ranging from even as a child. Though he had two older siblings, his older brother went to school and was attacked by some white youth. Then again, Fred, before he was Chairman Fred, had took a wagon full of bottles across the street to the school to, let's say, deal with the situation. He spoke up for others, who were not in a position or did not speak for themselves. There was no Black swimming pool facilities out here in Maywood. A sister was just telling me, elder from the community who went to elementary school with him from, I think, probably third grade to eighth grade. And she talked about how they were around 11, 12, 13 years old, how he went to fight had a facility open for a swimming pool facility for Black children. And when the police threw a tear gas canister out at him, how he took the hot tear gas canister and threw it back into the police station. I believe the Black Panther Party was his calling, as they say in church. Like, you know, what's your call in life? What do you think? I believe it was a fit. He was a Panther. He was a Panther, you know, man, body, and soul. He was a servant of the people. The system had knew his potential. We a colonized community. In many cases, see our potential before we even able to see our own respective potential. And they saw that Fred Hampton was later to become Chairman Fred, or Deputy Chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party.
So let's get into that. Let's speak more about, you know, what exactly it was about your father and the work that he did that the authorities found so threatening, and that ultimately led to his assassination.
It was a sense of self-determination on their own terms. There was not a seeking out of a state sanction to say, okay, this is a problem that there's a swimming pool that is not available for Black children. He wasn't waiting for that state validation. Similar to when we talk about, I think it's important that we distinguish, we talk about even with the programs of the Black Panther Party, that we do not negate the political significance of it. As programs ranging from the free breakfast program, free busing programs. Chairman Fred everything from his respective title and the organization, how they dealt with contradictions. It was not, you know, held captive by the confines of Robert Rules of Orders. It was Chairman Fred was a revolutionary. It represented a revolutionary organization.
Talk to me about the difference between being a revolutionary and a reformist.
A revolutionary, we're talking about complete change. And you talk in particular, as I mentioned earlier, about the specific traits of this system, U.S. imperialism. Many people have a reactionary assessment of this system. They may say, on one hand, how horrid this system is to our community, but it's in the same breath, you can see the pleading to be accepted by the same said system. It's ingrained, it's interwoven in the religious institutions, the educational institutions in our families. And in fact, I say today, in our attempts to organize, it's like coming with a scalpel to come at a cancer, let's say, for lack of better terms. And when many people see that scalpel as a knife that's coming to attack them, you have people take a position there. Well, that's my father's school. That's my mother's church. Holding on, defending the system that on one hand we look at the news coverage and we see Trayvon Martins, we see Rekia Boyds, Breonna Taylors, and George Floyd, and on, but then in the same breath you'll see people in the same breath say, well, we're going to look for justice come from another aspect, another tentacle of the same system. In so many cases, even when it's like on this dying leg, those who are subjugated by the most attempt, in many cases, who attempt to come and give it mouth to mouth resuscitation to bring it back. A young man, he was very intelligent, but he had quoted a piece, Princeton Machiavelli, and he said something to me. Chairman Fred, the Machiavelli says, he who builds on the people builds on the mud and on a mire, the mud. And I said, you forgot to mention the next page. I said, for the exception of the prince, the people will come to the defense of those who they know have taken an interest, not for his or her own subjective personal interest, but for that of the people. A revolutionary, again, is guided by the most sincere love of the people and sees no redeemable qualities in a system that was birthed and that thrives off the little blood, sweat, and tears of Black people in particular. And other colonized communities in general.
Let's take it back a little bit more. What was life like for you and your family in the years following Chairman Fred's assassination?
And many people look at dynamics of revolutionary in a short-lived, subjective way, like, okay, similar to the way we look at police murders in our community. We don't see the reverb effect, the follow-up, the repercussions that come down. The follow-up after the 99-plus rounds fired into the home, to the apartment of Chairman Fred and Deborah Johnson, the way that the police carried Chairman Fred's body out, the ongoing, to this day as we speak, annual shooting up of Chairman Fred's tombstone by law enforcement in Haynesville, Louisiana. The repercussions I received in elementary school for just making mention of Chairman Fred, the continuous hijacking of history, whether it be through bogus books or just simply revisions of history. I'm honored to be the son of Chairman Fred Hampton and also of Cool and Jerry. I'm honored to be fallen from the tree of two freedom fighters. But I don't romanticize either. A lot of heat comes with it. And it's a blessing and a burden. But I would have no other way. Again, I'm honored.
Absolutely. So what sort of void do you think your father's assassination left in the city of Chicago and the Black Power movement as a whole?
There's a myriad of ways we talk about the impact, the void that was all left with the assassination of Chairman Fred and Defense Captain Mar Clark, the way it occurred. I spoke about the elementary school he attended. There are adult Black men who have told me how they remember the following days, I believe exactly December the 5th, 24 hours after Chairman Fred was assassinated. They remember law enforcement, police coming through their homes, taking Black men out, bringing them out their homes and saying publicly, there will never be another Fred Hampton. The void in a city that was and remains to be one of the top segregated cities in the country, talking about Chicago, where historians have been fearful to even make mention of Chairman Fred. I recall backstage, I think it was approximately 2012, concert, my first contact with a young brother, Nipsey Hussle, and I was a little distance away from him. This is a time when it was real popular. They were wearing the white Jesus medallion, a lot of artists. But so I seen the chain of medallions. So I said, "Well, what does he have on?" And I got a little closer. I said, "Whoa!" I said, "It was a gold chain with medallion with Nipsey Hussle had was Malcolm X." And I remember I said to him, "I said, are you familiar with Chairman Fred Hampton?" And his automatic response, his confidence, his response, not antagonistic, his automatic response was, "Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., what type of man would I be if I knew who Chairman Fred Hampton was?" Mm. And, you know, that stuck with me. You know, I at the funeral service with Stanley Tookie Williams, co-founder of the Crips, I recall us leaving the service. And we went to have a week, like a community repass by Leimert Park. And I remember saying something to the effect that you know, Tookie, who coincidentally me and him had the same birthday. I said, Tookie Williams grew up in a climate like similar to that I grew up in, deprived of an organization such as the Black Panther Party, where the only options in life provided to us is to become a quote-unquote Boy Scout or quote-unquote banker. But being deprived of that, you know, not role model, but we like to refer to him as a real model.
You mentioned the history as well and the retelling of history. So you're involved with the film Judas and the Black Messiah, and I'm interested in how you got involved in it. I know that I'm sure plenty of people have come to you and the family trying to get projects done. Describe for me what stood out to you about this one and what made it different.
Just give a little backdrop just to, you know, reiterate what you said. There have been plenty of overtures brought to us and under contested conditions. I spoke about how I was around 12 years old and one of the Chicago winners, and those who are not familiar with those winners, they can check for today. They can check right now, today, as we speak, how cold it is as we speak. That the latest reference is they call Chicago Siberia. That's the term they use now. Siberia. This is one of the winners our heat was cut off. And I asked my mother. I say, so if this book deal they're proposing, that will address that problem. And I remember her principal position. She said, no, go, because she talked about how there was an attempt to elevate the police, to make them the heroes, so on and so forth. And there were attempts by different movie makers who really couldn't, if they wanted to, relate to who Chairman Fred was, to kill him again. And then, in addition, the tug and pull, the different forces involved, cast, producer, director, all these dynamics must be, you know, taken into account. And you know, we were, you know, fortunate, you know, to have a dream team, say, of sorts. You know, and not to say that there were no struggles. You know, there were times, there will be times when our political position would clash or contend with something that may be advantageously speaking, creative wise, but to find that point of unity, and you know, and not to be confined to that just of a 9-to-5 schedule. To not look at the case of Chairman Fred or the Black Panther Party and just in a quote unquote conventional definition. Some people say, well, finally, are we going to get a movie that tells us about Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party? I said, do not look for this picture to be an end-all panacea. The movie industry cannot give you you can't put a shark in a fish tank. You know what I'm saying? But the aid, the ongoing struggle to, you know what I'm saying, to address contradictions that we are acknowledging. No, you killed him, as opposed to prior to that, even with the blood still on the ground, you know what I'm saying? The politics that goes into place. There are policies in Chicago in particular, in other parts of the country, throughout the world, where law enforcement and attorneys, they tell families, do not associate with Mr. Hampton. Do not talk to the Black Panther Party, because, but you see a different dynamic now. We can even have conversations on our own terms.
Absolutely. Yeah, the time seems right for this story to be told in the way that it, one of the ways it deserves to be told. And I'll be honest too, when I first heard about the film, I was skeptical for many of the reasons you mentioned, because this is a story that folks have really messed up in a lot of ways over the years. So when I saw it, I was pleased to see majority of what they did with it was, I would like to think, representative of, you know, what type of person he was and what the humanity and the reality of the situation to a good deal.
And I want to say right on. Your sentiments are justified that people should. I'm still getting texts as we speak. People, you know, texting Chairman Fred, is this legitimate? Is it go? And our response is, as they say in the streets, it's a green light. Because but people are justified with their guards up, with their concerns because of the history. So it's not a paranoia or you know. So we thank the people, we thank the community for their defense. You know what I'm saying? Even though they may not come to all events or whatever, they might can't articulate, but they're guarded protection, you know what I'm saying, of that Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to see more of that for all the leaders that are really working in our interest. So that's great to hear. So what's the big thing you're hoping folks take away from the film? Because as you said, this isn't the entire story. It's a slice of it. But what do you hope people take away from it?
Just the conversation thus far. You know, the critique, the criticism, to have this conversation also, in particular, to recognize that there was a revolution, resistance, a revolutionary organization, and that there is. In fact, one of our matches with our organization, they would say, the Cubs are coming, the Cubs are coming. The Black Panther Party Cubs are here. I came up in a climate where, you know, it's all, you know, you hear this whole narrative, well, it's the Occupy movement. Is that the Black Panther Party of the day? Is this the Black Panther Party of the day? And we also, we have an actual entity, the Black Panther Party Cubs, right in your face. We say, man, you're talking about Ralph Ellison's Invisible Men and Women. I'm right here. So to acknowledge that, if that's not your cup of tea to engage, you know, to engage in struggle, so be it. But let the record reflect that there is resistance that is fighting for their precious entity of self-determination.
So let's dig into the work you're doing today. So I imagine you were politicized like right off the bat, right when you arrived on Earth. And I'm interested in what it was for you, what it was like for you growing up. How were you politicized and what was your journey into revolutionary work to where it is today with the Cubs?
I recall saying something to the effect of my mother one time. It was after a situation that I was in the infamous Stateville prison, the same Stateville that Chairman Fred was at. And I think the Malcolm X, Spike Lee's version of Malcolm X was playing on TV. And I remember this brother upstairs from me. He's like, man, that's what happened to him. Who was that, you know? And I was like, now stuff I took for granted that people would know. And I said to my mother, I said, maybe we're kind of subjective about thinking that people should know certain things. You know, as a child, when an ice cream truck comes down the street, you know, was going to the ice cream truck, but I have to wait to make sure that it was not a Good Humor ice cream truck, being the fact that Good Humor is the, we still to this day do not patronize it, because that's the entity that worked in conjunction with the government to frame Chairman Fred for the infamous Good Humor ice cream truck robbery, in which they say he took all the ice cream and gave it to the children. I recall being in West Side Chicago, and the brother that was in the car with me, I remember him vividly. He said, why do you keep looking back in the rearview mirror? He said, don't you have your license? And I said, I do. And that's the point why I keep looking back at the rearview mirror. And he could not relate to it. I remember some, you know, cats, my contemporaries, said, oh man, he think he back in the 60s, you know, but we are in that lineage. We are the great grandchildren of Garvey, offspring of Malcolm and ideological cubs of Panthers. We correlate our programs, such as the Triple C's, Children, Community, and Cubs, to the Black Panther Party Free Breakfast Program. We correlate the Free Them All Radio, hosted by myself and Lady of Rage, to the Black Panther Party Intercommunal Newspaper. We attempt to turn the communities into classrooms. We fight for self-determination. We, in many cases, some of the same issues, the exact same names that Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party were addressing, are political prisoners. Our position still remains to fighting for the freedom of all political prisoners. We're in response to what we call Hurricane America. A lot of people call Hurricane Katrina. You know what I'm saying? We're down in New Orleans. You know, we had the Black Cross campaign, which we immediately hit the ground, you know, providing some, you know, survival needs, you know what I'm saying, to the people. We have the Black Panther Party Code of Conduct, where we approach the streets and we say, okay, there are certain things, we don't approach the streets as idealists, but there are certain things that are no-no, you know, so that can happen in the community. We have the Black Panther Party Code of Culture, which the mantra for that is that there are too many of us in same, for people just be talking about some bling-bling. In other words, we don't try to make artists our leadership. We don't put the onus of responsibility and struggle on them. They have to have some points of unity with the struggle. We've seen that represented in Dave Chappelle Block Party when I came unannounced on the stage and talked about the case of political prisoners. We've seen it with the different drops we've used on different artists. Not all the quote-unquote, they refer to the conscious artists. Many cats were reactionary, but dropping that, what we call that Panther Cub political appeal in that applesauce. Even this the soundtrack for the movie, Judas and the Black Messiah. You know, that's part of the Black Panther Party Cub Code of Culture. Not only me speaking about it, but certain other artists. Up in the ante, some point of unity with the struggle, we distinguish a war from a revolution. A war is when you have two occupying armies who are suited up and booted up to get down to get down. A revolution, on the other hand, when you gain the minds and participation of the masses of the people.
Describe the conditions needed to create a revolutionary environment or a revolutionary moment. And are we living in those conditions?
I'll go with the latter part, if I can, first. I think we are living, we see this as a reactionary a reactionary climate, reactionary time. Now, mind you, as Malcolm X has said, that the collective consciousness of the people ticks slowly, but it erupts with a volcanic force that makes Mount St. Helens look like nothing. To the first part of the question, people get involved in struggle one of three ways, so become quote unquote conscious one of three ways: inspiration, aspiration, or desperation. Hmm. And these are definitely desperate times.
What would it take to change that, to make the conditions different?
Those who are inspired to seize the time, the vanguard party, to remain consistent even when it's not fashionable, to have a constant ear to the ground of the people, to have that entity there when people come, different people come to points with different times and periods in their life and situations, circumstances. But to have that entity there, we have been, you know, we Black Panther Party Cubs, we've been fighting to save the home of Chairman Fred, to turn it to not only a museum, but also a community resource center. There are so many institutions that permeate our communities that do not work in the interest of the community. We don't just to have that base where people can come and say, wait a minute, I know where they at. I work out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we got to be here. Because we like the Black Panther Party Cubs, a lot of times people say, man, I don't understand, Chairman, why they not, you know, supporting this, why they not doing this. I'd say, you must understand, we are like the last call for alcohol. Mm. We are the ones that after people get through going through all those state-sanctioned spokespersons and going through the runaround, they get jammed up by these different opportunists and say, wait a minute, who is that over there that's been serving us all this time? Who is that been coming on public transportation to protest these cases, the police gunning us down? Who is that who took a principal stance regardless of how many poverty pimps have profited off the people's pain? And they said, wait a minute, check their resume. They've been here. They, you know, say, why have I not noticed them? Because you've been told directly, indirectly, don't speak about them. Don't acknowledge them. Don't acknowledge them until it becomes what we would call a safe period in time. What I mean by a safe period in time is that similar to that day at Muhammad Ali on the Wheaties box cereal, late 80s, before his physical death. And someone asked, why would you put Muhammad Ali on a Wheaties cereal box now, as opposed to doing his heyday boxing? And I believe the representative of Wheaties cereal actually said, we can do it now because he's safe. They couldn't touch him at a certain time. We, the Black Panther Party Cubs, we serve hot meals. We serve our programs, and we serve hot politics. Mm. These are hot times.
You know, to me, it seems that over the past, you know, almost a decade now, there has been more interest from our community into taking action. But I do believe you're right. It's largely reactionary. But I'd like to be optimistic in thinking, you know, as you're describing, at a certain point, a fraction of those will find organizations like yours or others in their community that are doing continuous proactive work. Would you agree?
I do agree. I suffer from battle fatigue, but I also, our faith in the people. Oh, man. The war stories and just even to get to the stage in the game with the movie, the Hampton House, and so many campaigns in general. We have literally kissed the casket, tango with torch, and dance with death. But our faith in the people, no, is undying. No doubt about it. I do believe that. Yes, indeed. Historically, I've seen it. I know we've been counting out the game. And technically speaking, you look at, the fact that we still here, I think it was a meme I seen somewhere on social media. They said, if Black people look like what we've been through, if we physically look, appear like what we have actually been through, man.
That's real.
Man.
That's real. So you mentioned the Hampton House. Tell us about what you all are doing with that.
Our programs, the Triple C's, you know, even though there's a climb with the coronavirus, we have to be a little more strategic. We got to come with, you know, the PPEs and, you know, the more gloves. We're going to continue to serve, you know, the Saturday, the food, the clothes, right? Particularly every Saturday, the Triple C's, Children, Community, and Cubs. We out there. We the tours and the museum, you know, so we have to work, you know, be kind of cautious on the numbers of people that come in, how we do it. Community Resource Center, people still, regardless of whatever time, you can do an actual movie, just watching how our response to certain conditions. You know, I mean, what they refer to as the vortex. We just talked about the cold weather, Chicago, how we, you know, it turned Hampton House to a heating center. I dare not limit our resume to just that of this, but this is a major aspect. We're still fighting for the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, long-held political prisoner, Lena Peltier. You know, we did coalition work with the indigenous community in Standard Rock, North Dakota. Those are just a portion of the camp. Dealing with also the climate, which is infamously referred to as Chirac, this war zone, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people say, well, I see you talking about the police killers, and y'all deal with that, but I don't see you talking about how you deal with the black-on-black crime. That's a term we have an issue with also, for the record. We have an issue with that term. But so, no, we deal with contradictions within our community. Just because you don't see it on the news don't mean we don't deal with it. We also take the position that, what the Black Panther Party position was, that differences amongst the people are reconcilable. Difference between the people and the state are irreconcilable. You can Google, find these young brothers, FTP. They did a piece called Free Them All. These cats was into it. They were having struggles with each other initially. And we got like a little makeshift studio at the Hampton House. So they came and recorded their piece at the Hampton House. They recorded, and not just recorded it, we held them accountable. We said, y'all just not going to be no rappers, you know what they call it, you know, talk this stuff, you know, engage in the work. We went to the Cook County Jail right there during the vortex, freezing cold. That's all in the video. We got them to still continue on with the work. So we not just talking, we get, you know what I'm saying, we get people to tie into actual work. I tell you just can't get on YouTube and just do a bunch of talking with this organization. You have to do a certain amount of Cub community service. You know what I'm saying? You have to tie theory and practice together.
That's beautiful. It makes me think of, and this was depicted in the film as well, but at a certain point, Chairman Fred Sr. linked up with some gentleman from the street organization. I believe it was the Vice Lords, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think that there's potential for that today, you know, where you're doing work? Because obviously the conditions for the brothers that are in the streets are similar in many ways, but they're organized in a different way than they, you know, may have been when those organizations were first started. So do you see potential to politicize and link up with them in similar ways?
So the deal is there is so much potential. So we have a history. We have the code of conduct. We, our relationship, again, we don't, how we deal with the conscious community, you know what I'm saying? That's our office. So we open the door, as we've seen in real, in actual reality, how Chairman Fred, who authored the Rainbow Coalition, how they won certain point, forced certain points of unity. You mentioned the Vice Lords, but in actuality, the Vice Lords were one to work at the Free Medical Center. The Devil Disciples later became the Black Disciples, worked at the Free Breakfast Program. Blackstone Ranch, they became the Black Keystone Nation. You know what I'm saying? The unity, and you know what I'm saying? But now, even by the federal government's own account, it's when the Black Panther Party was in existence, there was a record low to what they call black-on-black crime. So we study in our community what's phenomenal. I mentioned earlier about having these youth at the studio at Hampton House. We studied the phenomenon of these cats in the music industry. So, and fighting for power, we relate to what Minister UEP Newton said, that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in desired manner. Again, power is the ability to define phenomena and make act in desired manner. What is phenomena? An unusual event that could be scientifically explained. We've seen that Reverend Nat Turner took the phenomena of the church during the era of chattel slavery, put it into the ground. And a lot of people say, well, that's not our actual religion. We don't come from that. Reverend Nat Turner said, I got to deal with. Took that church, said, praise the Lord, and passed the ammunition. Harriet Tubman took the Negro spirituals, said, okay, now how can we take this and work that number? Y'all singing, let's tie this into the song. When the sun go down, even better by the water. Chairman Fred, even members in the Black, some of them were members in the Black Panther Party who could not relate to the significance of Chairman Fred dealing with not only the what we call the unpoliticized street tribes. Our job, the present day vanguard, is to study what's phenomenon. The movies alone, it's a phenomenon. Some people say, well, we, you know, and I unite with criticism because we had a heavy position against this narrative coming from William O'Neill. That's a, you know, that was a major touch point with us. However, we say, okay, we are realists. It's a phenomenal discussion. How can we define it? Let's define the phenomenon and make it work in desired manner.
You know, obviously this movie is titled Judas and the Black Messiah. We know who the Black Messiah is. How do we identify present day Judases? How do we scope those out and get them out of situations where we actually might be trying to build something, as Sherman Fred Sr. did, as you're doing, as many of us around the country are doing?
Sun Tzu said in Art of War, cardinal principle of warfare is know thyself and know thy enemy. We must heighten the contradiction. A lot of us do not want to do that. We want to say, well, I don't want to talk, because we're fearful of what's going to come out. We have to heighten the contradictions. Let the record reflect. Chairman Fred, William O'Neill was never on Chairman Fred's security. He made it a point. You know, Chairman Fred has said on a number of occasions, you know, he said, this nigga know how to do everything you call for. But Chairman Fred related to democratic centralism also. This is a structured organization, checks and balances. So there, you know, the deal is, with age, this is going to continuously send and exploit agent provocateurs and potential agent provocateurs. I'm saying to say potential because a lot of times they have just a psychological profile on individuals. And they take that and exploit that. A lot of people say, well, just, you know, William O'Neill just did it for the money. We have done background research. You know, the profile, on psychological profile, on not only William O'Neill, but his father. He's seen Mitchell as this, who was a special agent in charge, as some sort of father figure for him. And in many cases, you see that. See, the dynamics of, you know, studying our potentials and lack of potential, they have profile. They, even with Black Panther Party, the government, they knew who to kill. They knew who to lock up. So we have to heighten these contradictions and recognize certain realities. And we going against all odds. That's a reality.
When you say heighten contradictions, explain a little bit more what you mean by that.
We're told, don't say that there are differences within our people, that you disagree with each other. No other community is fed that fertilizer. One day all Black people will come together. I don't know what community you can use that as a frame of reference. There are differences. This happens in this community, South Side and West Side in Chicago. There are contradictions between those. That's why we strategically, every event we do, every December 4th, every IR, International Revolutionary Day, every August 30th, every Chairman Fred Street Party, people say, Chairman, why do you have an event on the South Side and the West Side? It's balancing, it's acknowledging. We acknowledge that there are contradictions within our community. But we're told, don't acknowledge. No, let's heighten them. And it's not because I'm better than you or so on, but it's acknowledging those contradictions. Say, okay, we got that out of the way. What points of unity can we move forward on? And that's what we have to do.
To learn more about Chairman Fred Hampton, Judas and the Black Messiah, and how to support the activists and organizers following in Chairman Fred's footsteps to serve the people, visit www.liveforthepeople.com. And just like that, we're at the end of this episode of Black History Year. This podcast is produced by Push Black, the nation's largest nonprofit Black media company. At Push Black, we agree with Marcus Garvey when he said, a people without knowledge of their past, history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots. And I'm guessing you probably feel like that's important too. I mean, here you are at the end of a podcast about Black history. You matter. Your choice to be here matters. It lets us know that you value this work. Push Black exists because we saw we had to take matters into our own hands. You make Push Black happen with your contributions at blackhistoryyear.com. Most folks do $5 or $10 a month, but everything makes a difference. Thanks for supporting the work. The Black History Year production team includes Tariq Alani, Patrick Sanders, Abani Jones, William Anderson, Jerea Bradley, Brooke Brown, Shonda Buchanan, Brianna Lambach, Courtney Morgan, Akuia Tay, Tasha Taylor, Leslie Taylor Grover, and Darren Wallace. Producing and editing the podcast, we have Sydney Smith and Ivana Tucker. Julian Walker is the executive producer of the podcast. And I'm Jay from Push Black. Thanks for checking us out.